Welcome to Harlow on Healthcare. I'm David Harlow, and I invite you to join me by my virtual hearth as I sit down with healthcare leaders to discuss building the future of healthcare. Today, my guest is Dean Sawyer, CEO of Freespira. Dean is a healthcare industry veteran and digital health pioneer with over 20 years experience as a startup founder, CEO, chief commercial officer, VP of sales. He also has experience in the venture capital space and working with incubators, accelerators, and foundries. Welcome, Dean, and thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
So, Dean, drawing on your experience in the space, it has been an interesting ride, to say the least, of the past year as we've all lived through the pandemic. And I'd appreciate hearing from you as we kick off our conversation, a description of what you're working on now. What is Freespira? What is a digital therapeutic? And how does that connect with the experience that we're living through?
Yeah, so again, thanks for having me. Freespira is a treatment that helps patients that are suffering from some of the most life-impairing conditions in all of healthcare, which is those that are having panic attacks, have a formal diagnosis of panic disorder, and/or PTSD, really get treat the underlying physiological cause of those conditions. So it turns out there's research that has been done at Stanford and others that show that there is a physiological cause to these conditions, which is hypersensitivity to carbon dioxide. And very interesting how they kind of identified this hypothesis or validated this hypothesis is that they brought people into the lab that were having multiple panic attacks per week, gave them a single gulp of CO2 enriched air. And the vast majority of those patients that were having panic attacks had a panic attack right there in the lab. This has now been repeated by dozens of researchers in a number of different institutions, not just with panic disorder patients, but also with PTSD. And with PTSD patients, which is really interesting, is that when they were given this CO2 challenge, they would have either a panic attack or even a traumatic flashback right in the lab. And so that kind of confirmed the hypothesis that there was this underlying physiological issue. And so the theory was at the time that if you had this hypersensitivity to carbon dioxide, when you're exposed to trauma or stress, you would be much more likely to develop the symptoms of these conditions. And so what we've done is essentially create a solution that includes a sensor that measures your real-time breath-to-breath exhaled CO2 and your respiratory rate and a protocol that patients do twice a day for 17 days. And what it does is it really just trains you on how to normalize your kind of this dysregulated breathing style that you have related to hypersensitivity to carbon dioxide. And what we find is after these treatments twice a day for 28 days, the vast majority of patients have a very significant reduction in symptoms. Many go into complete remission, and it also leads to really high cost savings as well on the payer side of the health insurance company.
There must be so many different costs and experiences that would be avoided by cutting it off at the pass, so to speak. What you said is fascinating in so many different dimensions. Number one, who would have thought that carbon dioxide would be the cause for this? And sort of does somebody just sort of stumble into that by accident? Or is there a theory about that? And sort of at the other end of the spectrum, the question that comes to mind is, how does that sort of practice using the app become so ingrained that it becomes a behavior that someone can draw on in a moment of panic?
Yeah. So this hypothesis around hypersensitivity to CO2 was originally called the kind of Klein suffocation alarm hypothesis. This was back in 1993. And it essentially says that this breathing, if you are hypersensitivity to carbon dioxide, it leads to kind of chronic hyperventilation and respiratory dysregulation. And that is just the way the people breathe normally that have these conditions. So it's not, the product is not indicated to treat people that are having a panic attack or kind of a PTSD flashback. It's really to train them, really teach them a self-management skill that they can learn over the 28 days and continue to practice, after the 28-day treatment. And what's really fascinating about it is that if you can kind of normalize your respiratory rate, normalize your exhaled CO2 levels, then it eliminates the vast majority of the symptoms for most patients. And so it's not only is it this kind of hypersensitivity present in panic disorder, PTSD, but even in other conditions like asthma, for example.
So by going through a regulatory approval process, the therapeutic is presumably reimbursable by payers. I've heard this debate rage for years, the question being, do we need to go for FDA approval? Is that the be-all and end-all? Is that the validation that we need? Is that the only way we get into the market? Walk us through, if you will, sort of the decision to go that route and, you know, your thoughts on whether taking other routes in is a rational approach.
Yeah, so it really depends on, you know, several factors. One is the type of treatment that you have. So our treatment includes a device, you know, a sensor. And again, this is a sensor that is used at home, and it measures your real-time exhaled CO2 and respiratory rate, and then displays that onto a tablet computer. And the way the system works, or the treatment works, is that there is a kind of rising and falling audio tone, and then a UI, kind of a visualization of where your normal band is for your exhaled CO2, where your normal band is for your respiratory rate. And essentially, your job as a patient is to 17 minutes twice a day, change your respiratory style so that it eventually you get it into these normal ranges. And so because we have an actual device, we thought the most conservative route would be to go and get a class 2 kind of 510K.
Sure, that makes sense, where it's a device, not quote unquote just right. An app.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's not just a device, there's also software, and mm-hmm. we were able to patent, you know, the device in the protocol for PTSD. So it's actually a very big engineering challenge, because mm-hmm. what the original research that was done at Stanford used a kind of commercial grade capnometer, which is what is used if you're going to go, you know, under anesthesia in a hospital. And so the challenge that we had when the company was first started is could we create and develop a low cost, you know, portable device that can be used at home that could measure breath-to-breath exhaled CO2 in respiratory rate, and again, displayed it on a screen. And it had to be patentable, you know, so there would be some IP protection around it. So significant engineering challenge, but after about 3 years, we were able to kind of crack the code and develop it. And as far as we know, we're the only company in the world that has a sensor like this that measures breath-to-breath exhaled CO2 and has this protocol for treating these disorders.
Very interesting. So meanwhile, in other parts of the world, so to speak, there are other approaches to treating these conditions or disorders. And these include pharmaceutical treatments, I imagine, as well as talk therapy, cognitive behavior therapy, things like that. Are you making inroads? It sounds like you see better effectiveness with this treatment versus others. Where are you on the adoption curve?
Yeah, so there's a little, you know, what's really interesting is, again, there's no product on the market that addresses this underlying physiological cause or these underlying physiological factors that really predispose patients who are exposed to trauma and stress to get these conditions or these symptoms of these conditions. So it's very unique in that regard. And I would argue that it's such a significant part of these conditions that most patients are not going to get complete symptom reduction or going to remission without addressing the underlying physiological issue. And again, there's exceptions to that. But if you look at the predominant treatments for panic disorder, PTSD today, it's cognitive behavioral therapy and medications. And there's some significant kind of limitations for each. And if you look in the literature, what I've seen is about 10 to 40% of patients using those modalities will get, you know, some type of long-lasting relief. But on the therapy side, first of all, it's a long duration. Typically, it's 12 to 18 sessions. Most therapists are not practicing evidence-based treatment when it comes to these conditions. There's also obviously a lot of long wait times. Some of that has been helped with the telemedicine aspect now of cognitive behavioral therapy. And so most patients, and another kind of component of the cognitive behavioral therapies, are usually using behavior or exposure-based treatment. And most people with these conditions do not want to relive their trauma. So most of these patients just go on untreated. And on the medication side, again, medications have worked for a small portion of patients, but again, there's some serious limitations there. First of all, there are significant side effects that patients get. Up to about 50% of patients who go on these types of medications, SSRIs, benzodiazepines, will have significant side effects. It can also lead to, addiction issues. And if you discontinue treatment, there's high relapse rates. So for the few people that are controlled on medications, again, they usually have some type of side effects. And if they discontinue it, then their symptoms return. The Veterans Administration, interestingly enough, the Center for PTSD at the Veterans Administration has removed medications for first-line therapy for PTSD because, again, they just haven't seen them be very effective, and they're associated with abuse and other kind of limitations that I just talked about.
Sure. Well, that's very interesting. So are you seeing uptake with payers, with prescribers, with patients? How has this been going?
Yeah, so we're pretty still relatively early. This is our second kind of full year commercializing the treatment. Our business model is we're selling the solution. It's a B2B to C model. We sell the treatment to health plans, commercial health plans, managed Medicaid plans. Just hired someone to manage our employer channel, so we'll also be selling to large self-insured employers and working through the benefit brokers in that space as well. And then we're also on the schedule with the VA, the Veterans Administration, and we're also on what's known as the e-catalog, so we can sell it into any federal institution. So we just hired teams to really manage the business in the VA and the government sector for us, so that's just getting underway. But on the commercial side, we have a number of reference customers. So Highmark Health, for example, just announced an expansion of the program earlier this year. They also completed a study that was published late last year that showed very high reductions in symptoms. The majority of patients actually no longer met the criteria of having panic attacks and were panic attack free. They also noticed that in the study, they had very high reductions in cost. So 35% reduction in overall cost in the year prior to treatment versus the year after treatment. And so based on those results in that study, they've expanded the program and will now be kind of expanding it within their commercial population. We're also working with or in discussions with their managed Medicaid population as well. And then on the employer side, we had a pilot customer, which was Comcast NBC Universal. And they also published a study earlier this year, did a pilot program that, again, they did in conjunction with Crossover Health, their on-site clinic. And they saw very similar results, efficacy rate, 80 plus percent of patients having a significant reduction in symptoms. And again, really high adherence. So that also led to an expansion of the program with Comcast and also with Crossover Health.
If you're just tuning in, this is Harlow on Healthcare, coming to you on Healthcare Now Radio. I'm David Harlow, and my guest today is Dean Sawyer, CEO at Freespira. Dean, we've been talking about the progress that you've made in a relatively short time frame in commercializing your solution and getting the uptake in the marketplace and the progress that you're making there. Let me ask a couple of questions about sort of what the landscape looks like going forward in a couple of different ways. One, what are sort of other kinds of conditions that are susceptible to this sort of therapy, right? Not obviously not exactly the same therapy, but this sort of general approach, combining the pure digital with a connected device in order to provide a treatment, perhaps a behavioral-based treatment for a condition. The conditions that you're addressing are, of course, significant in the scheme of things from a sort of healthcare systems perspective. They affect a relatively small percentage of the general population. Obviously, if it affects you, it affects that's the most important member of the population, and it's a significant issue. But sort of broadly speaking, it's a relatively small percentage of the population. Do you see these sorts of tools being applied to conditions that affect a bigger proportion of the population, a bigger proportion of the healthcare dollar overall?
Yeah. So what's really interesting is that and I was very surprised when I came on board as a CEO about 18 months ago that the prevalence of these conditions is higher than I expected. If you take patients that are having panic attacks, panic disorder, and PTSD, it's about 10% of the population. And again, some of those patients have found some relief, but most go untreated. In fact, the average duration of time in our clinical studies that somebody had these conditions was 10 years, and they had tried just about everything on the market and nothing really worked for them. And so to get back to your question regarding sort of a business model where you're including a device and a sensor plus software. And the other part I should mention is that there's coaching involved as well. So we have coaches that work with the member or the patient, train them on how to use the device, provide education, and then I work with them over the 28-day period to make sure that they're getting really good results. And kind of what's really unique, I think, about using a sensor or device in combination with software and a coach is that our coaches are actually receiving physiological data, which you don't get just if you're using, say, a cognitive behavioral app, for example.
Right.
And so our coaches can actually see the changes in their exhaled CO2 and respiratory rate and the trends, and they can see whether they're adherent and so forth, so they can really personalize the treatment. But, I mean, this is a pretty common model, at least like in the diabetes space. Patients are using diabetes monitor plus coaching. So that model is kind of out there. And again, what's interesting about diabetes is that the prevalence is about the same as these conditions, but the cost is higher, and these conditions are more life-impairing. Again, I was really surprised to hear, but if you look at the World Health Organization, they have looked at across all chronic conditions, and panic disorder and PTSD are actually number one and two most life-impairing conditions in all of healthcare, more so than going through cancer treatment, more than diabetes, more than heart failure. And it leads to more days out of roll, so about 45 days out of roll for these conditions. And so,
I'm sorry, 45 days, meaning 45 days in the course of a year, unable to go about your
correct.
Usual business?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so think about it, an employee who has panic disorder or PTSD, they're missing an average of about 45 days per year, which obviously is very significant. And many of these, these are really life-impairing conditions. A lot of the folks that we treat, they can't go to the ballpark, they can't go to the store, they can't drive in a car, they can't get on an airplane, they're afraid to speak in public, they're always afraid that they're going to have a panic attack in public or a flashback. So they're really, really difficult conditions to control. But what's really interesting that if you can control these two conditions, panic disorder and PTSD, get those stable or under control or in remission, then the other behavioral health conditions that these patients have tend to get better. And even the other medical conditions that they have tend to get better. And sometimes in the case of asthma, there's kind of a direct connection. But in others, it's just that these patients now are not preoccupied with these conditions and all the fear around those and avoidance of behaviors. They can now focus on their other behavioral health conditions. They can focus on their other medical conditions. And the other thing that's really interesting is that in our clinical studies, for the patients who responded with Prespera, not only did their panic disorder symptoms reduce or get eliminated or their PTSD symptoms, but their other behavioral health conditions also improved, whether that was depression or addiction or just overall general wellness. Even suicidality was reduced. So if you can treat these really life-impairing conditions, then other behavioral health conditions get better, other medical conditions get better. And it is really life-changing for patients.
That's tremendous. And certainly in the year of the pandemic, we've all read and heard about an explosion, if you will, in behavioral health issues as people have been isolated and dealing with other issues. And it sounds like if somebody were in this treatment program, there would be positive impact on other sorts of issues. I'm wondering if you've seen any of that specifically among your user base in the course of the year of the pandemic, or whether you see that as an opportunity for the company to do more good in the years ahead.
Yeah, it's a really mission-based company. In fact, the original founder of the company is a woman named Beth Siegelman, and she was in the original study that was done at Stanford University, which showed north of 92% of patients having a very significant reduction in symptoms. And so she had life-changing results from the treatment. And that led her and her husband, Russ Sigelman, who at the time was a partner at one of the largest, best-known venture capital companies in the world, Kleiner Perkins, to start the company. And so there's still that kind of mission-based focus of the company, really wanting to help people change their life and give them freedom from these really debilitating conditions. And it hit home for me I have a personal story. Just a couple of months after I joined the company, about 18 months ago, my sister told me my nephew, who was 12 years old at the time, was having horrible panic attacks, couldn't go to school most days, or she would get him in the parking lot and he wouldn't get out of the car. Mm-hmm. Once in a while, she'd get him to the door of the classroom, he'd turn around, and sometimes he would get actually in the classroom, stay for a while, and then would just run out. Other kind of issues like that, and just certain things just caused him to kind of melt down and go into these panic attacks. And so 2 weeks into the treatment with Free Spirit, where he's learning to regulate his breathing, she called me in tears and just said, I can't believe that the difference this has made already, that he went to school, 5 days in a row that preceding week. And his meltdowns and kind of other areas of life also were positively affected and essentially went away. And so the cool thing is we have a channel in the company with all of our coaches where they put stories, kind of patient testimonials as they're going through treatment at the end of treatment. And it's just so inspiring to see the way this product changes patients' lives.
That's tremendous. That's inspiring. So in the time we have left, Dean, I would like to ask you my standard wrap-up question here, which is, if you were to wake up tomorrow and find yourself 5 years in the future, what's one thing in healthcare that you would hope or maybe expect to find has changed dramatically?
So I think it's a few things, and I'll just stick with the topic of behavioral health. So I think we're beginning to see that there's becoming less and less stigma around mental health. So I would think in 5 years, we're going to continue to see that progress. I also think you're going to see access to behavioral health therapies, and it's going to be based on the patient's preference in terms of setting. So this could be a completely digital experience through an app. It could be kind of a telehealth cognitive behavioral therapy. It could be other at-home solutions like what we provide, or in person. And that experience would be really more consumer-oriented, like you see in the rest of the rest of the world. And that it would be either synchronous or asynchronous, and that all of the data would be downloaded into one electronic health record. And the other thing I think we'll see is just more focus on a current trend right now, just called whole health, really focusing on the whole person instead of looking at patients as, hey, this is a diabetic patient, this is a PTSD patient, but now this is a patient who has some behavioral health conditions and they have some other medical conditions, and really treating that whole person rather than just kind of treating the individual conditions that they have. And I guess closer to home, I would hope in 5 years that it is now the standard of care to treat patients that have CO2 hypersensitivity related conditions like panic attack, PTSD, even asthma, that they are treating this underlying physiological cause of these conditions, and that these patients are getting really great outcomes, and we're changing a lot more lives.
Well, great. All things we can stand behind, I think. I especially like the emphasis on the whole patient perspective, and that, of course, has applicability in many spheres across the healthcare ecosystem. Thank you, Dean. I've enjoyed speaking with you.
Thank you.
You have been listening to Harlow on Healthcare. Join us at healthcarenowradio.com. Let's continue the conversation on building the future of healthcare together at #HarlowOnHC. I'm David Harlow, keeping the fire going and holding a seat open for you. Until next time.